Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. There's groundbreaking news in the Naugatuck Valley, both literally and figuratively, and we're going to bring in the first of two representatives from Griffin Hospital to talk about it as the health center ramps up development of an innovative behavioral health unit to provide more effective, compassionate care for individuals who might otherwise come to the ER experiencing a mental health crisis. Then in the final segment of our Mental Health Awareness Month series, we're going to introduce you to Team Wolfgang and Company, a nonprofit founded by three Fairfield mothers of adults with alternate abilities, looking to provide daily purpose for them as they were about to leave their state-provided educational programs. Then we're going to close giving you a spectacular preview of the 2025 International Festival of Arts and Ideas, which is already expanding its programming across the New Haven region. And we'll culminate in hundreds of programs, concerts, exhibits, talks, and more in the coming weeks, most of them absolutely free. And speaking of globally recognized talent, in our own backyard, internationally renowned dance theater company Palabolas will host their annual ball in Washington, Connecticut on Saturday, June 7th. This year's fundraiser, Beauty in Your Backyard, will take place at a private residence and include a full company performance set in a natural landscape, followed by dinner and dancing. The event is particularly important this year as the arts face new funding challenges from the NEA. For Palabolas, whose innovative and accessible programming spans local schools and global stages, this fundraiser is both a celebration and a critical funding opportunity. For tickets to Beauty in Your Backyard, just connect to palabolas.org/ball2025. Well, as we mentioned in our introduction, a big news down in the Naugatuck Valley with the introduction of what is known as MPATH, the Emergency Psychiatric Assessment, Treatment, and Healing Unit that is on the way to being developed at Griffin Hospital in Derby, thanks to $1 million gift from the Hewitt Foundation, which has enabled the establishment of this innovative, pioneering unit that addresses the growing demand for mental health crisis services and offers specialized help to Connecticut residents in desperate need of specialized care. We're going to have two conversations about this development. The first of which is happening this morning with Lindsay Slabaugh, who is a nurse and is the Griffin Hospital Emergency Department Director. She's also a master's candidate in science of nursing. And we're soon to be chatting with Dr. Maria Daw, who is the chair of the psychiatric department, as the other bookend in this conversation on this new and exciting development at Griffin Hospital. Lindsay, thanks for joining us, and thanks for tuning in and helping with this project.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So, as we talked a bit before we hit the microphone, your entire career really has been focused on emergency medicine, and rightfully so. You came up in this on a step-by-step basis. For the sake of the folks listening, just give them a quick little snapshot of your journey to where you are now at Griffin.
Yes, so I started my nursing career working in the ER at St. Vincent's 20-plus years ago. Started working as an emergency room tech and knew that this was my calling and my passion for emergency nursing. And once I graduated, I started working in the emergency department there. Worked through various roles from tech up through nurse, charge nurse, and nurse manager. And then have had a couple positions as a nursing director with various organizations throughout our state. After I joined Griffin about 2 years ago, and have been happy to be here ever since I joined the team.
Yeah, that's great. Were you, as a younger person, the one that always came running with the box of Band-Aids when somebody fell off their bike or anything? I mean, was this kind of in your DNA before you even decided to pursue a professional track in emergency medicine?
Absolutely. Both of my parents have medical careers. They were both respiratory therapists. So I was always the one that didn't run away from the action. I was there to stay in and help.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, tell us a little bit as far back as you can in this story of establishing the empath unit at Griffin Hospital. Did it all start out of this issue that really is kind of happening nationwide, where the emergency departments have served a dual function as becoming a kind of de facto intake zone for mental health emergencies?
Absolutely. I think a lot of our healthcare in our nation right now is challenged, and post-COVID times, it's accelerated this fire that was already burning before COVID. We're struggling with resources in our community financially, access to healthcare. So the emergency department becomes the one place that's open and available for anybody to come any time of the day, regardless of your ability to pay or have insurance. And now we're seeing a lot more behavioral health, mental health needs from our community members. And this has existed for a long time in my career, from what I've seen. But as our country and our states have changed, there's less resources for people in the community. So now we're seeing even more people present to the emergency department that are looking for some sort of psychiatric help.
So as we mentioned, we are going to be having another separate conversation about the implications on community mental health and the region's mental health as a result of having an advanced empath unit right in its midst. But from your perspective, it's fantastic that you're on with us now, because you can really help shine a light on a lot of what goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people probably don't know about but could afford to learn about. And I appreciate you being able to do that for us. So in terms of the general operation of an emergency department like Griffin, give us the lay of the land. What is it that you're seeing there in terms of the types of patients and cases that come through, maybe compared to a more urban hospital like Bridgeport or Hartford Hospital or something like that, or a trauma unit like up in Waterbury? And proportion of the traffic that's coming through the doors that could get its best service in an emergency department like Griffin versus maybe could get better or more appropriate service at an empath unit?
So I think all emergency departments are seeing the same type of patients, regardless of our community. Sometimes financial struggles lead to more violence or more episodes of depression, anxiety, what our kids are feeling in schools. But I don't think any one community is unique to this, because there's so much in our world, excuse me, that's creating stress that we're all carrying these extra burdens and weights on our shoulder. And so we're seeing a lot more people that are asking for help. I also believe that our younger teen, this new generation, is more open to asking for help, and they've been big advocates for therapy and resources. And so I think some of their ability to openly communicate their needs or their concerns or when they're struggling has helped lead this, take away the stigma that it's okay to seek care for behavioral health or mental health concerns.
Well, that being said, from your perspective, not just at Griffin, but over the past decade, how often are you, for lack of a better term, screening a potential mental health issue when the individual may have actually come into the ER for something else?
Well, I'd say at least once a day, somebody's coming in and asking, they're presenting for a medical complaint, but then in the course of conversation, they're also alluding that they're struggling with something else. And while they're here, they're asking to speak to one of our social workers or somebody that can help them. And as emergency room nurses, we're obligated to ask questions around safety for every patient that walks in our door. So that's our standard treatment, about asking if you feel safe. Are you safe at home? Are you safe in your relationships? Are you having any thoughts? Because we do have those resources, and it's a lot more prevalent in our communities these days, that I think people want to acknowledge. So that's part of our duty and our obligation as the emergency room staff, is to make sure that we're asking our staff, our patients, those questions.
Do you think it's unusual for someone who comes through your doors after a car crash or a dog bite or a sprained ankle in a softball game to, through the proper interactions with the medical team, they are discovering or learning for the first time that they may need to also consider that they're having some sort of a mental health issue?
I wouldn't say it's usual or unusual. I would say it's a matter of us making them feel safe. That if we've done our job and we've created a safe environment for whatever their initial reason was for coming to visit, but we supported them in a caring and compassionate way and they felt safe here, sometimes taking down that wall, that it opens that opportunity for the patient to take down that wall and talk to us.
Well, let's shift the conversation to talk directly to the listeners in the greater Naugatuck Valley and those who might come to Griffin Hospital or others. If you could explain to people what the implications are if they are making their first choice when experiencing a potential mental health issue, what are the implications of them making an emergency room their first choice to go to?
I think an emergency room, we're here. We accept anybody that comes to our door. It's not our job to determine whether or not this is truly an emergency, because in that patient's eyes, this is we're their option. So we wouldn't want to deter anybody from seeking care here if they feel that we're the outlet. It's really challenging right now to find someone, if you're in a psychiatric emergency, to find somebody that's readily available for you. Sometimes there's wait lists. Sometimes your insurances only cover certain people, and it's hard to find that resource. And we've all heard far too often about somebody that felt they didn't have any options and then took their life. So I always, people try and they're trying their best. And this is what we tell our patients. You did what you could, but you felt like you needed more, so you came here. And that's what we're here for. And that's what makes this unit so exciting, is because it gives a special and a warm place for patients to come that feel like they are in their lowest, deepest, darkest moment, and that we were their only resource. And so we can give them this dignified care in a very compassionate and healing environment, and that's what's unique. Because other places, we have to prioritize safety, and so sometimes that safety can look very sterile and cold and not warm and fuzzy, like you want to feel when you're already sad or you're feeling down or you're stressed out. And so that's why I'm so proud and excited to be part of this, because when somebody's coming to me, I truly believe they felt they didn't have any other options at that moment in time.
So as you and your colleagues helped advise the process, as the dream of this empath suddenly moved into a new chapter with the reality of the $1 million gift from the Hewitt Foundation, what were a few of the most important things you will hope to see once the ribbon is cut and patients start getting diverted into the empath unit who are qualified or appropriate to do so?
Yes, so obviously safety comes first to me. I always wear my safety cap, and we want to make sure that we're providing a safe environment so that people can't get hurt or cause harm. But then we really want it to be a warm, human, person-centered, just caring, compassionate environment that's calming, it's healing, it's peaceful, and it allows people to find that quiet space and kind of quiet your thoughts and regroup and create a meditative feeling when you're over there. So a lot of times in that, and I talked about where it feels sterile, you're taking people's belongings. We're locking them up for, again, for safety reasons, but it's not dignified. And this approach to psychiatric treatment is a more dignified way of providing them care and in a healing and a safe environment together.
What are a few of the the comforts or features of the empath unit at Griffin Hospital based on cutting edge psychiatric and mental health science, do you think are going to, make a huge difference to people that might otherwise just have that ER experience?
Yeah, so a lot of times your ER experience is a hallway or a closed room. So this is going to be a warm space that's going to have appropriate lighting. It'll be calming lighting. There's going to be guided imagery. We'll be able to have the opportunity to even start some therapy, some group sessions if possible in that unit. So it's really going to be very, very different from what a normal emergency room visit looked like for a behavioral care complaint.
Very good. As we close out the conversation with you this morning, Lindsay, where are we actually at in terms of the progress toward this empath unit being fully operational?
So we are under construction. I can't tell you the exact timeline, but we are fully into building the unit and construction is underway.
Very good. And I do understand from the press release that support is still being sought from the public and corporates and other grant underwriters to complete and fully stock and staff this empath unit. So if folks are interested in learning more, certainly they can go to griffinhealth.org and speak with folks at the hospital to find out how you might be able to play a personal or a corporate role or a philanthropic role in making Griffin's empath unit the best it can be. This empath unit represents a brand new approach in behavioral health care with a calming therapeutic space for patients in emotional crisis. And we're so pleased to begin a conversation to learn about it with Lindsay Slabaugh, who is a nurse and the Griffin Hospital Emergency Department Director. We'll be back in a couple weeks to speak with Dr. Maria Daw, the chair of the psychiatric department, to hear more specific information about this development in the Greater Nautic Valley. In the meantime, Lindsay, thank you so much for your time today. Well, we always celebrate brand new members to the For the People family, and today we have another Team Wolfgang & Company. As we mentioned in the introduction, it was founded in 2017 by one of our guests this morning, Kelly Maffei, along with friends Amy and Chris down in Fairfield. They are all mothers of adults with disabilities looking to provide daily purpose for their young adults who are about to leave their state provided educational programs. We're going to get into the conversation about the challenges that they faced and how Kelly and her friends and now Executive Director Christine Payne are working toward solutions and support. But first, we want to invite you to a fantastic kickoff to summer with a night of trivia and toasts, all to support an organization you learned about right here on the award-winning For the People a few weeks ago named CARTI. Yes, you're invited to help raise funds for early childhood art and museum education across Connecticut at this nonprofit's annual summer social. It's coming up on Thursday, June 12th at Stapa Vineyard in Derby. Gather your friends for trivia for a cause, a local wine tasting, delicious charcuterie, a museum bus tours aboard the rolling CARTI Museum. And you'll also get to bid on some great auction items. To learn more and get your tickets before they're sold out, go to carti.org, C-A-R-T-I-E.org. All right, from Cardi to Wolfgang, Kelly and Christina, I have to say, when I first got the email asking to reach out to you and see if you would be kind enough to come on For the People, I read it fast, and I thought it said Team Wolfgang and Company, so I thought you guys were like into music education, like Mozart and things like that. So and then I looked more carefully, and I saw, oh, why are there dog prints on their logo? and then I looked carefully, and I saw Team Wolfgang and Company. So Kelly, let me start with you. Take us back to 2015 and 16 when the inspiration for this Team Wolfgang journey was forming.
Thanks so much for having us. Back in 2015 and 16, I started gathering parents in my bonus room above my garage, because I was petrified at what is going to happen with my youngest, who happens to be neurodiverse, and just, you know, trying to figure out what the path was, because it wasn't as clear to me as it was for her older brother and sister, who both are neurotypical and were going off to college. And I just was trying to grapple with, what does life on a daily basis start looking like for her? And knowing that I wasn't alone, I, of course, reached out to my fellow special needs parent, and that's when I had the great fortune of associating with both Chris Burbank and Amy Stern, who helped co-found Team Wolfgang & Co. in 2017, after we went through a whole bunch of options in terms of, you know, what could we have these young adults do. And so we ended up merging love of our dogs with love of our kids, because, you know, many of our neurodiverse friends rely on, you know, their pets or their four-legged furry friends for companionship. And we decided to have them make and bake dog treats. And gratefully, we lovingly refer to it as a kitchen cabinet, right? So our friends became, with all their talents, became the kitchen cabinet from which we pulled from. And I had a friend who was a classically trained chef, and she came up with a pretty gosh darn good recipe that involved peanut butter. And we launched at a Parade Your Paws for a Cause on October 28th of 2017. And when I tell you it was like Field of Dreams, I ain't whistling Dixie. I mean, we had no idea how well the treats would be received, or if anyone would come. And it was they came in droves. And you know, Wallace Swallow Washington, you know, our Puppernutter Patties became our first product that we launched, but. Product was treats, but most decidedly the purpose was, you know, to give these young adults who mean so much to us an opportunity for something to do on a daily basis.
Well, as we mentioned in the introduction, while this is playing on June 1st, we are recording it in the last couple of days of May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. And a big part of what we've always tried to do here on this program is to address and eliminate stigmas, which could be the impetus of an individual who's neurodiverse or otherwise alternately abled to begin to have a component of mental health issues. Can you speak a little bit to, you know, what in fact is, you know, part of a two-pronged job, the first being to address the needs that these young people have when they get out of the education system, and the other really to help to direct and manage an organization that creates product to sell to support the first prong of the effort. How do you find that this is in some small way helping to mitigate potential mental health concerns with a lot of the young people that you're dealing with?
Yeah, I think there's two things to be mindful of, right? So if you are a person with a disability and you are left idle, I mean, isolation can wreak havoc on someone's psyche. There's a great deal of loneliness. I mean, I am so proud that we managed to survive COVID. And, you know, COVID, you know, did such a number on, you know, the general population. But when you think about what it did to those who are neurodiverse, I mean, many times, like someone who is, you know, is differently abled, you know, has to be reminded, you know, ad nauseum, you know, like, you know, wash your hands, mask on. I mean, all that, I mean, that isolation did such a number specifically on our population. And, you know, so, you know, we ended up Zooming with them three times a week. We had them bake the dog treats out of their homes. And because we were, we also have a great gift in the form of a storefront on the Post Road in Fairfield. And one of the things that we taught them was, like, you know, folding their laundry. So we did everything, you know, with standing back handsprings and cartwheels to try and keep them, you know, continuously engaged. So I always look at all of our kids, regardless of their need, as three-legged stools. You know, you have one leg that is, you know, you've got to provide for food, medical, and shelter for your loved ones. There's another that's a leg of the stool that's daily purpose. And the last, based on us all being human, is there is a social factor. And I got to tell you, more and more of our young adults that come to us, and we're handling, I think we've had over 160, I shouldn't say handling, we are gladly serving and blessed by their presence. 160 different team members have come through our doors, and we don't graduate them. They stay with us and become family. There's probably 90 that remain with us, and the balance have gone on to other, have physically moved or have found, you know, other opportunities. But, you know, so many of them come to us and, you know, have a good deal of anxiety. And so we provide them with a safe haven. We give them a framework that makes sense to them in terms of being able to accomplish a task, you know, with the parameters that, you know, we know that they'll need, you know, a certain level of support. And it just gives great dignity to them as human beings.
Excellent. Folks, if you want to learn more about what this organization's doing, you could certainly visit their storefront down on the Post Road in Fairfield and learn all about them at woofgangco.org. That's W-O-O-F. gangco.org, wolfgangco.org. We're going to give you a break. We were talking with Kelly Maffei, who is the co-founder of Team Wolfgang and Company. Christine Payne is also on with us. She's executive director. So, Christine, we will talk in a few minutes about this great event that's coming up on June 5th. But first, from your perspective as kind of the pilot of this two-pronged effort, give us your perspective on how it's working now and how you see Team Wolfgang and Company serving both its constituents and the communities where these folks work in the future.
How is it working now? You know what, John? I've been here a year, and I think that gives anybody a chance in a new job to really get an understand of the population that they're serving.
And we're in a very upbeat place as an organization as a whole. What we do is happy. Our storefront is happy. We go out in the community, it's happy. But on the back end, I've been able to hear the gratitude in the people we serve, our team members, their parents, the problems that they had before coming to Team Wolfgang, the hardships that they've gone through and what we've done help their families. Because, you know, talking on mental health, as you probably have heard this, a lot of people, or maybe they don't know, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are 5 to 6 times more prone to anxiety and depression. And sadly, those they're not diagnosed as much, they're not treated as much. So you can't even, you know what, I have typical kids, and I still see, you know, a lot of people have problems. So what's the big difference? The big difference is it is an impact on the family. It's harder on the parents. It's harder on their jobs. It's a strain on their whole family situation. And what Team Wolfgang does is it brings them to the next level. It makes the team members happier, right, more productive. Hopefully we can help them get jobs, go out in the community. But it helps the family structure as a whole become stronger. In the community as a whole, I think our people make people better people. And in the future, we just not only want to continue to sustain and serve more people, but actually even enhance our programs. I mean, there's so many different ideas we can do to help our people to grow. But again, we are a home base. Some of our people will go on to get jobs, but some might, I'd say about maybe half might never get a paying job. But at Team Wolfgang, we are their job. And that is priceless. That is a priceless gift to give to someone or someone's child. That kind of pride in what they're doing, as Kelly said, daily purpose.
Yeah, so true. So to keep it sustainable and to grow, obviously, it means Team Wolfgang and Company needs support. And part of that support, I imagine, is going to be coming thanks to folks attending a big upcoming event on June 5th. Let's hear about that.
Oh, we're going to have a great time on June 5th. So I do want to add, we receive no government funding, and we are solely supported by the grace of majority of people in Fairfield County, individuals and different foundations and different corporations. And we're having a big fundraiser at Park City on June 5th, Thursday. And we still have a couple dozen tickets left. And the money raised from it supports about a third of our budget. So it has a big impact on what we do. And we have Band Central that's going to be playing. This isn't your typical gala. This is a night out for anyone. Everyone should grab a ticket, get a babysitter, come out, make the time. It's down on Fairvanilla Avenue in Bridgeport. And it's right across the street from our production center, our bakery.
Excellent. Will people be able to get into and see the actual operation as part of the agenda for the fundraiser, or is that, that a separate
that would
experience?
Be fun. No, they have to contact me directly.
Okay.
After that.
Very good.
That's a private tour, but John, you're the first one after this phone call. I'd love to give you a tour of our bakery.
Okay, very good. Yeah, and bring some of the kids in. We'll interview them and get it straight from the source about what an amazing thing you guys are doing, providing individualized vocational training, lifelong learning, and social opportunities to adults with a wide range of intellectual and developmental disabilities free of charge, and supporting their families and communities to help them live the fullest of lives through the two-tiered curriculum of an organization called Team Wolfgang and Company. We're so pleased to have their executive director, Christine Payne, and one of their co-founders, Kelly Maffei, on with us this morning. And it sounds like we will be talking to them again very soon. But in the meantime, we hope you'll come out on June 5th to their big fundraising event, or go to Wolf. gangco.org to find out how to volunteer, how to support them with donations so their efforts can be sustainable and grow, and to get to better know Team Wolfgang and Company. Ladies, thank you so much for your time today. Well, this is truly one of the interviews that I look forward to every single year. And I have to say that we have been promoting what is the International Festival of Arts and Ideas through and into its 30th celebration, its 30th year here. And this International Festival of Arts and Ideas is actually morphed into a year-round organization presenting an annual celebration of performing arts lectures and conversations in and around Greater New Haven. This festival convenes leading artists, thought leaders, and innovators from around the world for dynamic public programs to engage, entertain, and inspire a diversity of communities. Their main events kick off on June 11th, and we're so pleased to welcome the Reverend Kevin Ewing, who is their interim executive director this year. We'll jump right into the conversation with Reverend Ewing after we remind you about maybe putting a few bucks in your pocket for a good cause and helping save the planet. That's because the CGB Green Liberty Notes, a subsidiary of the Connecticut Green Bank, it has announced the launch of its 13th award-winning offering. Green Liberty Notes are designed for accessibility, featuring a low $100 minimum investment, a one-year term, and a simple online purchase process. Investments in the Green Liberty Notes offer support to Eversource's Small Business Energy Advantage program, which enables small businesses in Connecticut to lower their energy expenses through efficiency enhancements and interest-free loans. If you'd like more information on the program or to invest, just go to greenlibertynotes.com. All right, from supporting our environment to supporting our artistic endeavors here through the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, so pleased to meet and make the acquaintance of Reverend Kevin Ewing. Reverend Ewing, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm very happy to be here to talk about one of the best things that happens in New England every year.
So just to give folks a little bit of an orientation on your background, tell us a little bit about how long you have either known and supported or actually had some hands-on responsibility in supporting the day-to-day operation of this International Festival of Arts and Ideas.
I came to Connecticut in early 2001, working with the Hartford Insurance up in Hartford. And when I left the insurance world, I came down here to New Haven to attend Yale Divinity School. And it was actually while I was in Hartford, I found out about the festival and came down to see things, but I didn't really know what was going on until I moved here. While I was in school, I was working as a community organizer, working on the streets in New Haven in a few neighborhoods. And I got noticed by a couple of board members who invited me to join the board. So I've been on the board for the festival. I was on the board of the festival for about 17 years, 16 years. I don't know. I lose count. Mm. 3 years. And most recently, I was the chair of the board. Mm-hmm. My goal was to be the chair once I was voted in, to be the chair for the 30th anniversary. And then last year, our managing director left in, I believe, April. And then during the festival, Shelley, our executive director, announced that she had to move back to Minnesota to care for family. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of in a bit of a pickle, so to speak, of what to do this year. And so I was asked to step in as the interim director. And so I did.
Well,
and here I am.
Well, Reverend Ewing, is in some respects, given your background both in the community and with the festival, I dare say that you know, it's a little bit of a different approach. A lot of times, these festival directors that I've met over the years, you know, they've been sought out and recruited, sometimes for a year, sometimes for 3, 5, or more, but they've always come to New Haven. Even in some respects, in close proximity to the event that they're about to try to manage. You coming from that long history of internal participation has got to bring an interesting and I dare say a wonderful new dynamic to the organization.
Well, I won't speak to that. I will say that I am learning a lot. I'm seeing the festival from an entirely different perspective. Mm. And I thought I was pretty close to it while I was on the board. Mm. But now I'm seeing how the sausage is made, and it's beautiful sausage, but it's quite an intense process to get it done.
Yeah. And as somebody from who's been around New Haven for a long time, as I have, New Haven has an awesome and incredible and highly unique energy to it. But when this festival main event is happening, that energy level and that magic just cranks up 10 times over. And it really, really makes New Haven for a few weeks a global destination. Or if not that, at least a place that folks all over the world are looking toward because they may have friends or family or others participating and acts that are part of the festival.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing, and it's amazing how well we fit into it and how well it happens.
Mm. Well, tell us about the June 11th kickoff, because that's really kind of the official start of the main event. These several weeks of festival activities in New Haven.
So June 11th is our Visionary Leadership Award. Program. We've been doing that every year, I believe, for the last 15th anniversary of our Visionary Leadership Program. And that's a program where we select someone in the world who is doing something creative, unique, and visionary as a leader in the arts community, or in the world in general, not always in the arts. Mm-hmm. This year, our award winner is Monique Martin, who is also the creator of our opening show on the 14th and 15th, the Minty Fresh Circus. We selected Monique because she's been at the forefront and a leader in bringing the arts and cultural events to communities that typically don't see them. And using people that are traditionally not used in those arts. So it was her idea to create a circus that's around Black themes, Black joy, Black devotion, Black music, Black movement. She put together a cast of all Black American-born circus acts, circus performers. And in order to create that, because there was no database of circus performers in the United States that were Black, or period, probably. Mm. She put together that database. Wow. And so we are rewarding her work and her efforts. And it's a pretty interesting time, if I can go off on a little bit of a spiel here.
Sure.
It's a particularly important time because we've kind of been thinking about our theme. Every year we try to have a theme for our programming or for the festival. And we started off the year, our theme was harmony, recognizing that we are not in harmony right now, or that our harmony is very dissonant.
Yeah.
And that's the effort, that's an aspiration to be harmonious. And I was thinking about it as the one that has to be out and speak to that theme, one of the ones. I was a little uncomfortable because a lot of times with the things that are going on in this world, the attacks against the arts and against cultures and against history and against science, I'm not feeling very harmonious I know that's probably not a good thing to say, but that's kind of the way things are. And so I started thinking about what else could our theme be?
Sure.
This is the 30th anniversary. And that's the Pearl anniversary. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, so maybe we're the Pearl of New Haven. We are the precious jewel in New Haven. And that sounds good, and there may be some truth to it, but it also felt a little arrogant to me because New Haven is full of pearls. And then I thought about it. We're not the pearl. We're the mollusk. We're the thing that makes a pearl. See, a pearl is made when an irritant gets between the skin and the shell of a mollusk.
Mm-hmm.
And the mollusk then pulls together all of its resources and surrounds that irritant and presses against it and builds up around it until it creates a precious jewel. So out of the resistance of the mollusk, a precious jewel is formed. We are the mollusk, and we're creating pearls. So we are resisting the irritants that are trying to stop us from telling our stories. We are resisting the irritants that are trying to change us the way we think, telling us what to think and how to think, who we're supposed to love and how we're supposed to treat our bodies and how we're supposed to live in this planet. So we're resisting by continuing to do what we do. The Minty Fresh Circus, which is our first opening, June 14th to 15th, they did their first performance, public performance, a few weeks ago at the Kennedy Center. And there were a lot of people that were kind of perturbed that they went on and did at the Kennedy Center with what's happening to it and what's happened to the board. And their argument, and I agree, is they are exactly the kind of performance that the people that are that we are resisting want us to stop. So as an act of resistance, do it in the place that they don't want it.
Yeah.
Show them this, that you are not going to back down.
Yep.
And that resistance is how we create the pearls.
Yes. Unfortunately, the mollusk doesn't really embody a great brand for bumper stickers and T-shirts, but the concept in and of itself is quite beautiful. So, thank you for articulating it in that respect, Reverend Ewing. As we try to do in part of our interviews every year with whoever may be spokesing for the festival, We reiterate the fact that it's, about 80-85% free programming for over the course of the few weeks between June 11th and June 28th. But there are also some spectacular ticketed activities. Could you just give us an idea briefly of a couple of the more interesting ticketed activities that the festival is going to host this year?
Sure. Probably the first one is what I was just talking about, Minty Fresh Circus, June 14th, and then a matinee on June 15th, the 15th, and that's the Black Circus.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be exciting and wonderful when tickets are on sale, and we hope everyone shows up. We also have the Joshua Redman Quartet coming. That's a ticketed event on the 26th, also at the University Theater. We have Maria Ramos, who's a Latin Grammy Award winner, who's going to be performing also at the UT ticket event. So we don't have as many this year as we have in years past.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Yale Choral Artist. I was saying we don't have as many as we've had some of the years past, but what we have is spectacular.
Yeah. You also have a big focus on Juneteenth, right?
Yes. We have a Juneteenth program happening on the, I forget the date. Uh, Yeah, it's on the website.
Sure, yes. Our artidea.org, we should remind people, is the website to go for tickets, directions, inside information, scheduling, schedule changes, a very, very highly detailed breakdown of all the activities that are happening. Also, food and the opportunity to check out all that is wonderful about downtown New Haven, and just to leave it with the ticketed events. Speaking of cooking, Jacques Pepin will be part of the festival this year, right?
Yes, Jacques Pepin's going to come talk about his new book. There'll be an interview. Someone will be on stage with him, the whole conversation. And afterwards, he will sign autographs and take pictures and selfies with everyone that wants to. And we are planning to have not necessarily his food, because nobody can cook his food like he can. Mm-hmm. Those are his words. And so he doesn't want anybody to try his foods. But he does support two organizations through his foundation here in New Haven. One is the Concord Culinary Program, and the other one is Sanctuary Kitchen. And so we're hoping to get one or both of those to prepare a meal. We don't have it quite settled yet, but there will be food at that event as well.
Excuse me, moving to some of the free activities, one of the ones that caught my eye was something called the City of Floating Sounds Part 2. Can you talk at all about that?
I can. Well, first of all, I don't know why it's Part 2. Oh, no, it is. I don't know what it is. There are two parts to it. That's it.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking at dated blocks here. So City of Floating Sounds, what's that all about?
So the City Floating Sounds is a group out of London, out of the UK. There's a six routes that you can take throughout the city, six walking routes, and you download an app, and the app will lead you along the route, playing music, a track of music, and along the route there will be key points of interest. So one of the routes is the Pearl Route that starts somewhere downtown, I believe, near Union Station, and walks through downtown New Haven, pointing out the various events or spaces where events through the 30 years of the festival have happened. Mm-hmm. Another route is the Art District, going through the Audubon Art District. There's one going through the campus of Yale. Uh-huh. There's one going through the Dixwell neighborhood. And each person walking along would download the app and listen to some music. And that's Part 1. And they all end up on the green. And then Part 2 is the New Haven Symphony Orchestra will be performing on the green. Uh-huh. And at some point during their program that night, they are going to play the complete all six tracks of the City of Floating Sounds symphony.
I see. Okay.
And so that's the Part 2.
Okay. What's the other couple of big, huge, splashy public events that are going on for free on the green as part of this year's festival in the last couple minutes that we have with you?
Well, we have the Sons of Maestro. It's a violin duo with a DJ who plays classical violin. They play a little reggae. They play a little hip hop. Mm-hmm. They play a variety of different forms of music. That's going to be exciting. Juneteenth is June 20th, actually.
Okay.
There's going to be DJ Casey Cortez. Another big thing is the Squonk Brouhaha. They bring a truck to the green, and it's made up of various levers and buttons and steam and all kinds of stuff to create music. And the audience is invited to participate in playing some of the instruments, as in pulling a lever to make something happen on the truck.
Well, that's fantastic.
So it's very, very kid-friendly, lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. Great. So many dozens and dozens of programs being offered in the arts and in the ideas tracks for this year's 30th International Festival of Arts and Ideas, kicking off the main event, although events have been already happening and will continue after. June 11th is really kind of ground zero for the kickoff this year, with activities extending virtually every day between June 11th and 28th in and around downtown New Haven. Some spectacular ticketed events if you'd like to spin the wheel and pick what you might call your favorite from artidea.org, their website. But over 85% of the events happening at this year's festival are absolutely free to any or all who will come to downtown New Haven. You can find out all about it, get your tickets, make your reservations, or plot your course through Greater New Haven as you explore the 30th International Festival of Arts and Ideas. I thank you, Reverend Kevin Ewing, for being part of the program this morning. Dr. Ewing is interim executive director of the festival. He's been serving the festival for almost two decades. We appreciate you, Reverend Ewing, and we will be seeing you on the streets for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.